365 days a year.
Good afternoon and welcome to another edition of AHA Presents About Education. I'm Neil Kreisel and I'm your host every week right here on AM 1290, repeated at 10, and on Saturdays at 4. We're brought to you by Deckers, makers of Uggs and Tevas, Pialafon Wendy Foster offering fine clothes, good food, and vintage wines, Montecito Bank and Trust proudly serving our communities and their financial needs for over 40 years, Habitat for Humanity building strength, stability, and self-reliance through shelter, and CSU Channel Islands. No matter which of their academic programs you choose, you will be at the center of your educational experience. And we have today Elsa Granados, who's the executive director of the Santa Barbara Rape Crisis Center, here as our guest. Welcome, Elsa.
Thank you so much for having me today.
And I understand this is your 20th year as executive director.
It is my 20th year. In February, I had 20 years at Santa Barbara Rape Crisis Center, but I have been doing this work since 1985.
Wow. And, you know, for any executive director, a 20-year stint is a long time, and one that has as much pressure and trauma that Santa Barbara Race Crisis Center has, it's really quite a tribute.
Well, in order to work for this length of time, I've developed some great coping skills and self-care techniques in order to be able to do this work for the long run.
And that's the kind of tools that I guess your clients could use as well. You use the word coping, but I suspect that it's probably a valuable lesson for these clients to be able to take some of these methods you use to get through some pretty difficult times.
Absolutely. We teach self-care. We teach empowerment. Or remind people about empowerment, because some people know, but they forget, or they feel that as though it escapes them. So we do communicate these kinds of techniques to people.
So tell us a brief history of the center.
Well, it was started in 1974, along with many other rape crisis centers that were being started in California and across the nation. And at the time, there were three people in our community who identified that there were some needs that were not being served for survivors of sexual assault. And so one of the three decided to put a hotline in her garage. At that time, there were no cell phones, no cordless phones. It was one of those long cords that fed from her house into her garage. And that's where it all got started.
You know, this may not be an appropriate question, but you use the word sexual assault, which seems to be a much more politically correct term than the Rape Crisis Center. Was there any thought ever to changing the name?
You know, I'm so glad you bring it up. I have, I'll tell you this, I have half a surprise. The half of the surprise is that we are rebranding. We are changing our name. We are changing our logo. We are changing our colors. The reason for that is because we have used the existing logo and name since the late 80s. Well, actually, the name since the initiation. But we now, just looking at the landscape of sexual violence, we feel that it's time to change that. When someone looks at our logo, they see a woman's face. And more we are serving men as survivors of sexual assault, not only as significant others. At the time when the logo was developed, the people at the Rape Crisis Center at that time wanted to put a face to the statistics of sexual assault. So therein came the face. Nondescript, you can't tell an ethnicity, but certainly people see a woman's face.
And can you give us a scoop of what the name's going to be?
That's the half of the surprise that I am not prepared to give at this point, yeah. But we will be seeing it fairly soon.
I hear it's, I mean, I don't know if it's true, the Elsa Granados Center, but is that not true?
That's not true. That's not true.
I'm joking.
I know you're joking, but yeah, it's absolutely a community center.
Okay, so what's the fundamental mission?
So the fundamental mission is that we provide services to survivors of sexual assault and their loved ones. We provide intervention services to them. We also provide prevention services and education to our community at large so that we provide intervention, and that's something that we provide after an assault occurs. But we want to prevent an assault from occurring, so we educate the community on how to end sexual violence and what each of us can do to end or have a role in that end.
So you mentioned that this the founding date was back in the 70s, and I remember stories that back in the 70s, not just in Santa Barbara, but in most places of the country, if the assault was through a significant other or a husband, the police would come, if the police were called, and the husband would say, nothing really happened, and there would be wink, wink, and the police would go away. Has there been an educational initiative with the police here to make them aware of what really takes place?
Absolutely. And what we have to remember is that it wasn't until 1980 in California that marital rape was acknowledged. Prior to that, a husband could not be charged for rape against his wife. It was considered that once you got married, for the woman, you gave up your consent. That meant that the wifely duty was that to give sex whenever, however the husband asked. And so one can see how then that would emanate from law enforcement responsibilities. And so now, yes, we do have a very strong, positive and professional relationship with law enforcement. We train together sometimes. We certainly sit around policy tables to develop appropriate protocol.
Yeah, I used to be involved with the Domestic Violence Solutions organization, and I know they spoke so highly of the police because they have training programs as well. And it's been a 180 where the police will be more likely to take the word of the victim now than the perpetrator, which is a total change in perception, which is a tribute to both your group and other groups as well.
Yes, and actually, we in Santa Barbara are lucky that law enforcement is open to these issues, because that's not exactly true across the nation or even throughout California. We get requests from other rape crisis centers in California to ask us about what we do in order to foment that positive relationship with law enforcement.
So now what happens with all of this talk about immigration enforcement? Is it true that people are now afraid to call the police if there's an assault because they're afraid that they may be deported? Is that overblown or is that a real issue?
Absolutely, it's a real issue. We are hearing from our clients. At this point, it's only anecdotal. We're not tracking large numbers. However, people hear that people are being deported, and so they sit in fear, even though our local law enforcement has said that they will not be used as an arm of ICE. People hear the stories and then refuse to file reports.
And what's amazing is that this is a community, as you said, that is proud of the fact that it is, whether it's a name or in actions, a sanctuary city, and yet people are afraid here. Can you imagine what it must be like to live in a red state, that the threat is really real?
Yes, absolutely. And what we're doing now is we're safety planning with individuals. We talk with them about, okay, if you were to be deported, what would you do with your children? Who would pick them up from school? Maybe a neighbor, but maybe your neighbor isn't the person you want to have them or kept long term. So who would that be? Keep your documents, all of your important documents, in a safe location in one place so that if you are in the situation of being deported, that someone can scoop up those documents and then keep them safe for you.
You're listening to AHA Presents on AM 1290 KZSB, and we'll be right back.
Here's a question. Do you enjoy experiencing the best of Santa Barbara? Tasty restaurants, scenic hiking, local banking experts. That's right, local banking experts. Montecito Bank and Trust was voted best bank again by the Santa Barbara Independent, Santa Barbara News Press, and San Ynez Valley News Readers. Plus, they have over 40 years of experience, 10 branches from Solvang to Westlake, a convenient on-the-go mobile banking app, and a savvy team of local decision makers. Visit Montecito.bank today. Montecito Bank and Trust, member FDIC.
For more than 20 years now, the unique landscape and people of the Santa Barbara community have helped grow Deckers brands into the lifestyle footwear leaders they are today. Newly opened at their headquarters in Goleta, the Deckers brand showcase allows you to explore and shop the UGG, Teva, Sanuk, Hoka, and Ahnu brands while you're likely to discover something new or potentially receive an in-store special offer. At 250 Coromar Drive in Goleta, the showcase is open to the public 10 a.m. to 7 Monday through Saturday and 11 to 5 on Sunday.
Habitat for Humanity of Southern Santa Barbara County is building strength, stability, and self-reliance through shelter. Habitat has completed construction on 19 new homes for affordable homeownership. We'll build 3 new affordable homes this spring and has repaired over 35 homes through the A Brush with Kindness program. To learn more about how you can support Habitat by volunteering, donating, or shopping at the Habitat Restore, visit sbhabitat.org or call 692-2226.
Celebrating 50 years of serving loyal regular guests and first-time visitors, the Pierre Lafond Market and Deli invites you to enjoy their huge selection of fresh-baked sweets, cookies, carrot cake, muffins, and the famous farm cake, granola, Oreo popcorn, wine cake, homemade soups, and the popular fresh juice bar. Or get a coffee drink or fresh-squeezed juice and peruse the famous wall of greeting cards at the Pierre Lafond Market and Deli. Open 6 a.m. to 8 p.m. daily in the Plaza del Sol, Montecito Village.
Welcome back to AHA Presents About Education. AHA, using innovative social-emotional learning and character building to help teens. We're here with Elsa Granados, who's the executive director of the Santa Barbara Rape Crisis Center. So how many people does the center serve today?
So we serve... In the last fiscal year, we served over 600 individuals. Of those, about 450 were survivors themselves. The balance were significant others.
Okay, so explain, how do you serve the significant other? Is that someone who's not involved, but like a child or a sibling?
A husband, a wife.
Oh, so someone who's third party. This is not a domestic.
A co-worker, yes.
And you have where's your location?
We are at 433 East Canyon Perdido, okay. Right below Santa Barbara High School.
So, you know, we talked about, rather than rape, sexual assault. And, you know, that word's been in the news a lot. You know, the Bill Cosby trial is, you know, you see the nuance of what sexual assault is. Is there a way to define sexual assault?
There is. We believe that sexual assault is any unwanted contact, whether physical, visual, or verbal.
Okay, so how, and I'm not being an advocate here, I'm just trying to understand, how do you ensure that, you know, this is a joke, but it's partly true that teenagers have like half a brain, it's not developed yet. How do you... hold an 18-year-old student responsible to understand the nuances, if that's the maybe too extreme term, of consent. You know, so an 18-year-old and a boy and girl have a relationship, they get drunk, and, you know, the next day she says, I asked you to stop. How do we reconcile all that? They're both 18. They're both, you know, about as mature as, you know, I was when I was 12. What is the way that we can zero in on what real consent? How do we explain to our kids how to read consent? Is, I guess, the long-winded question.
Yes. So, unfortunately, or fortunately, however you might want to look at the issue, our laws do not allow for ignorance, the pleading of ignorance of a law. So What we know is that if someone is intoxicated either through drugs or alcohol, they are unable to give consent, because consent is something that one gives freely, without pressure, without force, coercion, or due to incapacitation. And so that's one of the reasons it's so important for us to get out into the community, into schools, into youth-serving organizations like AHA, to provide them with information and education about what is sexual assault, how to engage in healthy relationships so that those issues don't come up, or when it comes up, if someone is sexually active, for them to ask for the consent of their partner.
And one of the discouraging things about that tape that came out during the election of, you know, Trump using inappropriate language about women, and the response from his team that this is just locker room talk. That's true. It is locker room talk. But one of the problems in our culture is that locker room talk can lead to inappropriate behavior. And, you know, I've always thought that whether you have just boys or if you just have boys, you should be just as concerned if you as a parent of a female, because you're in a sense, by saying locker room talk is okay, you're giving almost a green light to some of these children's behavior.
And exactly. And what we want to do is change that mindset so that it's not locker room talk that is acceptable anymore.
So how do you get to people that aren't involved in an incident? I mean, you're dealing with, obviously, people that are, and we'll get into that, how do you deal with when it happens? But do you have initiatives to deal with young people or even old people before it happens?
Yes, we do. So our education and prevention programming is directed at that. Our intervention looks at the issue or works with individuals who have already faced sexual violence. But education, on the other hand, tries to prevent sexual violence from occurring, tries to change the mindset in our community so that we can hold perpetrators accountable, so that we're not blaming the victim, so that when jury pools are selected, they're selected with some education in mind, so that they don't fall to the myths about sexual assault, for instance, myths around dress or intoxication.
But how do you get people to participate in this? Is there a stigma? I mean, if someone just walks into the Rape Crisis Center on Canon Perdido and says, I'm interested in rape prevention, isn't that, in a sense, create some sort of fear of people thinking that you're involved in some way?
Well, the stigma sometimes deters people from becoming involved, but we're trying to change that. And what we do is provide interested individuals with extensive training, not only in being able to respond to calls from survivors of sexual assault, but also respond to questions from the community. We don't fault anyone in our community for holding misconceptions about sexual assault. However, we do hold everyone responsible for educating themselves about the accurate information about sexual assault. So if someone wants to come and take our training, gladly open it up for them, because then they are able to go out into the community and provide that information to others.
And you provide self-defense classes as well. And so my question about that is a little knowledge dangerous, meaning that you really need to consider that fighting back may end up being a worse result? I mean, or what is the self-defense classes about?
So the self-defense class, it's a four-hour class, and it teaches assertiveness, awareness, and physical techniques. And what we know is, and there have been studies done, is that the more tools that one uses to fend off an assault, the more likely one is to get away without being assaulted.
And what percent of sexual assaults are from a unknown, and what are from someone that the person knows?
So stranger sexual assault is about 15%. A balance, the 85%, are between people who know each other. And that may be dating relationships. It may be husband and wife, or wife and wife. It may be people who know each other through work or some other social activity.
It's a really amazing statistic if you think about it. You know, because, you know, people say, I'm afraid to walk down the street, but it may be more dangerous to walk down the hall in your apartment.
Absolutely.
You also train medical personnel. So I guess just like we talked about, the police had some learning to do back from the 70s and 80s. Medical personnel, did they also need to be brought up to current thinking?
Well, we provide training to medical personnel because one thing that some medical professionals aren't aware is that they are mandated reporters. Mm. And so as mandated reporters, when someone discloses the fact that they have been sexually assaulted, they must report to law enforcement. Now, law enforcement can come out to the medical facility and to interview the survivor, but she or he does not have to speak with law enforcement.
And this is a community that has a large Latina population. Is there any way is there any specific things that you have to do based on culture for different groups, or is it just basically human beings? I mean, is there specific things you need to do? So, for example, the simplest question is, do you have Spanish-speaking people that can obviously communicate?
Yes. So we do. All of the staff who provide direct services to survivors of sexual assault and their loved ones are bilingual in English and Spanish. And also, it's good to have some cultural competency. So we receive lots of training around cultural competency. But it's also true, we're not a monolith community, right, in the Latino community. So it's also true that there's individual differences. And so we provide services to that.
What I think would be obviously, and I'm sure you do this, helpful, is that the person on the other end of the conversation in your organization is sensitive to those specific needs and can read through some of the lines.
Absolutely. And that's part of what the training that I mentioned previously covers.
Yeah. You're listening to AHA Presents About Education on the Santa Barbara News Press radio station, and we'll be right back.
Here's a question. Do you enjoy experiencing the best of Santa Barbara? Tasty restaurants, scenic hiking, local banking experts. That's right, local banking experts. Montecito Bank and Trust was voted best bank again by the Santa Barbara Independent, Santa Barbara News Press, and San Ynez Valley News Readers. Plus, they have over 40 years of experience, 10 branches from Solvang to Westlake, a convenient on-the-go mobile banking app, and a savvy team of local decision makers. Visit Montecito.bank today. Montecito Bank and Trust, member FDIC.
Founded by a UCSB grad, Deckers Brands has grown into a global driver of lifestyle footwear. From humble beginnings in 1973, Santa Barbara has been a key element of the business, defining the company's culture, providing home base for many employees, and inspiring product innovation each year. For a first-hand experience, stop by the Deckers Brands headquarters in Goleta, 250 Coromar Drive, from 10 to 7, Monday through Saturday, 11 to 5 Sunday, and shop their new brand showcase retail test lab. Guaranteed, you'll see a new side to Deckers portfolio, from footwear to handbags to home furnishings.
Habitat for Humanity of Southern Santa Barbara County is building strength, stability, and self-reliance through shelter. Habitat has completed construction on 19 new homes for affordable homeownership. We'll build 3 new affordable homes this spring and has repaired over 35 homes through the A Brush with Kindness program. To learn more about how you can support Habitat by volunteering, donating, or shopping at the Habitat Restore, visit sbhabitat.org or call 692-2226.
You're invited to dine indoors or on the secluded garden patio, the sunny patio, or the covered creekside patio with fireplace at Pierre Lafon's Montecito Wine Bistro, where you'll enjoy the popular pizzas and many other dishes from the wood-burning oven, daily specials from Chef Victor, and selections from the elevated wine menu featuring Lafon and Santa Barbara Winery wines. Open daily at 11 for lunch, wine, cocktails, dinner, incredible desserts, and a daily happy hour from 3 to 6 with very unique appetizers, in the Plaza del Sol, Montecito Village.
Welcome back to AHA Presents About Education. AHA, Improving Attitude, Creating Social Harmony, Bridging the Achievement Gap for Teens. We're here with Elsa Granados, the Executive Director of the Santa Barbara Rape Crisis Center. And one of the things Elsa, you said in the beginning, which was quite surprising, is that you said that rape victims are men also. Now, how does that happen?
You know, recently we have been seeing more men disclose sexual violence, and I believe part of what assisted with that is the high-profile cases around the clergy abuse with the Catholic Church and also the Boy Scouts of America. So those two things, for the most part, were male victims, male survivors, as children were molested. And so when they disclosed as adults, then other men see them disclose and they're able to relate. And they say, okay, if that person had the courage to come forward, I'm going to come forward as well. So I think that that opened up the ability for men to, or at least for more men, to come forward.
And what about sexual assault among gay men? Is that something that is stigmatized so much it's not reported? Is it an issue? Do you see any of that?
Certainly there is sexual violence within the LGBT community, but I would say that there's more, a greater degree of sexual violence from outside of the community. So, for instance, people who are transgender are highly targeted for sexual violence from heterosexual men.
Why?
I think that,
I mean, maybe I could see just violence, but why sexual violence?
I think that when one is fluid in their sexual orientation or sexual identity, it presents a threat to what we call a binary, the binary being men and women. Mm-hmm. And so transgender individuals, not that they themselves are threatening, but their identification threatens others.
And you have programs for them as well?
Absolutely. We try to serve all pockets of our community.
Okay. And you maintain confidentiality as part of your services, obviously.
Yes. Confidentiality is the cornerstone of our being able to provide services to the community. Without that, fewer individuals would come forward.
Okay. So do you have a right to maintain confidentiality? Are you, like a lawyer, doesn't have to, but is there any way that someone could be subpoenaed and have to give up some information? Is there any protections that you were able to give to your clients?
We do. We have protections under the penal code because those of us who work at Santa Barbara Rape Crisis Center are considered sexual assault counselors once we undergo a certain degree of training. And so the penal code protects us. However, sometimes a court is able to compel us to give up our records, give up the information. However, we still sometimes have to hire legal advice in order to counter that.
You mentioned legislation. Is there any new legislation we should be aware of?
There is. There is various kinds of legislation having to do with, immigration, having to do with being able to extend the statute of limitations, also of developing a multi-tier system for sexual offenders. So that's legislation that's all working through the process right now.
And are you an advocate? Does your group actually advocate? Do you go to Sacramento or speak to your local legislatures?
We have a coalition of rape crisis centers in California called CalCASA. Mm-hmm. And through them, we lobby or exert efforts in order to change or impact legislation.
Yeah. So around the country, are there national statistics that could maybe give us a better picture of what this problem is? What are the highlights?
So the highlights are that 1 in 3 women are sexually assaulted, 1 in 6 men are sexually assaulted, 1 in 4 college-age women are sexually assaulted. Many people may have seen on Netflix The Hunting Ground. It's a film that looks at the treatment of sexual violence or how universities are not treating it properly. And so that has gotten a lot of exposure recently.
So given your job and the fact that you've been in it for 20 years, is it ever tough to go home at night and you know, crack open a beer? Or how do you personally deal, and how do the people who volunteer deal with, you know, it's not really good news you're hearing every day, is it?
No, it's not. But again, going back to self-care, what we started the show with, you know, I go and I exercise. When my view of humanity is skewed, what I find for myself is that I get back to nature. And so usually in the beauty of our community, I'm able to go out into to the ocean or to the mountains for a hike or a swim, and that does it for me.
So what are some of the myths about domestic violence, about sexual abuse?
So I think two of the myths that our community holds onto the tightest are, first of all, the one around dress. People believe that dressing provocatively invites sexual violence. And what we know is that that's not true. If that were true, in tropical areas, we would see a higher incidence of sexual violence. Whereas in, say, Alaska or countries where women are clothed from top to bottom, we wouldn't see any or very little. And that's not true. The other myth that people hold on to is that of intoxication. They blame the victim for being intoxicated and thereafter being a survivor of sexual violence or a victim of sexual violence. And again, someone who is intoxicated is not inviting sexual violence.
When I was involved with domestic violence, there was an effort made to help the perpetrator reconnect, if possible, after therapy, with the victim, because it was better to have a family together than apart. And if there was some love to begin with, then maybe it could be rekindled. Is that something that people in your business embrace? If somebody has a sexual predatory relationship with their wife or a loved one, is it rehabilitation possible?
It depends.
I mean, and do you work on, is that something that, you know, or you just tell the woman, keep clear?
We ourselves do not work with offenders. However, we work within a model of empowerment. And so we take our cues from the client. If the client wants to seek justice against that person and wants to see them thrown in jail, throw away the key, we stand with them on that decision. If it's happening in a relationship, an intimate relationship, and that person says that they want to keep the relationship together, then we work with them on that. So it's really, we take the lead from the client and therefore tailor our services to that person.
Now, you mentioned, you know, dress is not an excuse, and there's no correlation between how one dresses and how the prevalence of sexual predatory behavior. What about the internet? There are statistics that say pornography now has a greater audience and revenue stream than movies. Does the type of pornography that exists on the internet create an environment, or at least a view that men have, that actually, unlike dress, does have an impact?
Absolutely. We do believe that. There is no causal relationship at this point. But what we know is that pornography creates an environment, as you've said, in which women are viewed as objects. And so, therefore, it's easier to distance oneself from an object and therefore mistreat them as a result. The other thing that is sometimes surprising for people to know is that the average age when men start viewing pornography is actually as children, age 11. That's the average age. So we're seeing younger boys viewing pornography and then, of course, older.
You're listening to AHA Presents About Education on AM 1290 KZSB, and we'll be right back. Music.
Here's a question. Do you enjoy experiencing the best of Santa Barbara? Tasty restaurants, scenic hiking, local banking experts. That's right, local banking experts. Montecito Bank and Trust was voted best bank again by the Santa Barbara Independent, Santa Barbara News Press, and Santa Ynez Valley News Readers. Plus, they have over 40 years of experience, 10 branches from Solvang to Westlake, a convenient on-the-go mobile banking app, and a savvy team of local decision makers. Visit Montecito.bank today. Montecito Bank and Trust, member FDIC.
Available only at the company's headquarters in Goleta, the new Deckers brand showcase features the latest footwear from UGG, Teva, Sanuk, Hoka, and Ahnu brands. You're invited to stop by to experience firsthand what makes Deckers brand so unique. Discover new product and try on a range of offerings from your favorite Deckers brand at their retail stores. Now open to the public 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. Monday through Saturday and from 11 to 5 on Sunday at 250 Coromar Drive in Goleta.
Habitat for Humanity of Southern Santa Barbara County is building strength, stability, and self-reliance through shelter. Habitat has completed construction on 19 new homes for affordable homeownership. We'll build 3 new affordable homes this spring and has repaired over 35 homes through the A Brush with Kindness program. To learn more about how you can support Habitat by volunteering, donating, or shopping at the Habitat Restore, visit sbhabitat.org or call 692-2226.
In 1962, Pierre Lafond founded the first post-prohibition commercial winery in Santa Barbara County. In 1972, he planted his first vineyard in the San Ynez Valley west of Buellton and later hired legendary winemaker Bruce McGuire to continue to build on the stellar reputation that Santa Barbara Winery has achieved for more than 50 years. Today, you're invited to experience the award-winning wines at Santa Barbara Winery at the corner of Yananali and Anacapa and the Lafond Winery at 6855 Santa Rosa Road in Buellton.
Welcome back to AHA Presents About Education. AHA, helping teens achieve goals, surmount challenges, stop bullying, and communicate and listen effectively. We're here with Elsa Granados from the Santa Barbara Rape Crisis Center. And, you know, one of the important things that we do at AHA, and that's why I just said, you know, we try to stop bullying and you know, we try to improve people's empathy. How do you do? You have outreach for teens and young people about and victims. You know, how do you teens don't communicate with anybody. Do you have some way of getting to a 16-year-old girl who doesn't know where to go?
Absolutely, and usually that's through our education programs. So April is Sexual Assault Awareness Month, and each April we develop a campaign that targets a different part of our community. And what we see is that in the subsequent months after the campaign, we see our call volume go up. And so to the extent that we're able to go out into the community, provide education, we also bring forward survivors of sexual assault who have not previously come forward. And so when we're in schools, a great deal of our efforts, of our educational efforts, is to be in schools at the junior high, high school, and college level. And we go out and we talk about the incidents of sexual violence, but we also conduct some interactive exercises and have meaningful discussions about how to end sexual violence. So both of those combined, we create a safe environment so that people disclose, students disclose their experiences around sexual violence.
And you do it with both genders so that the men, the males, the kids who are male can understand what their responsibility is in all of this?
Absolutely. We do both. And again, going back to, yes, we're seeing survivors, female survivors of sexual assault, but also male survivors now as well. And we talk a lot about holding perpetrators accountable and not blaming the victim.
So you mentioned the April month, which is a national month, isn't it?
Yes.
And you have other events as well.
We do.
What are your events that you have?
One of our signature events is the Chocolate Divine. and it's a fundraiser.
It's chocolate. It must be good.
It's yummy. both chocolate and wine. We bring forward about a dozen or so chocolatiers, a dozen or so wineries, and they give tastings and samplings to our guests, and we use that opportunity to raise some funds for the Rape Crisis Center.
And how much of a percentage of the money you raise is from individuals versus foundations?
I would say about 25% is from individuals, so a significant amount for us.
Right, and your budget has grown, and therefore your services have grown dramatically under your reign. Pretty soon you're going to be an important part of the GDP of Santa Barbara. and how many people you have working there now?
We have 10 full-time staff members, another 4 part-time, and another 3 on contract.
And how many volunteers do you have?
We have 80 volunteers who serve in various capacities. Some provide direct services, some provide education, others serve on our board or on special event committees.
And how many of those 80 volunteers are women?
I would say about 80 or 90% of them.
Okay, because I wonder if it would be important to have a couple of men volunteers to talk about not just the violence that a man may have been victim of, but also to explain to kids if they're confused about what their responsibility is.
Yes, we do have males who advocates, and we are also very careful about how we talk about men, especially in their role as advocates for the Rape Crisis Center. We by no means blame men for rape in our community. Men are not the problem. The problem is how we raise men and how we raise women. And so as a culture, as a society, sexual violence is condoned. And so that's what we're trying to stop. We invite men to join us just as in the same way that we invite women to join us.
Go explain that. You said, I understood half of it, but what about you said that the way that women are brought up also it helps the helps to keep the problem alive. What is it that women experience as young people that make this problem worse?
So not all of us are provided with information about healthy relationships and how to set clear boundaries, how to say no very clearly so that's communicated to one's intimate partner.
And if you wanted to volunteer, do you accept people volunteering, or are you full? Are you full up?
We always accept volunteers. We have volunteers who work in various capacities, and we welcome their input because volunteers not only assist us at the Rape Crisis Center with the work, but they also assist us in bringing forward their circles, their loved ones, closer to the Rape Crisis Center to carry the message of ending the sexual violence.
And I assume if you wanted to volunteer, you have a robust website, which is
www.sbrapecrisiscenter.org.
And if you want to donate, you can donate on the website?
Absolutely.
We talked about some of the real problems. Are there success stories that just give you a sense that this is all worth it, that you can look back and say, wow, this really was wonderful?
There are success stories. There's both individual success stories as well as organizational success stories. Each client that comes in sets their own goals. And he or she says, okay, this is as far as I want to go. And I've met my goal. And great. We applaud them for that. Of course, we always open our doors to them to come back in the future, and many do. Sometimes as one goes through various stages of life, the issues that were triggered around sexual violence come back, and you're working on a different level, and so we invite them to come back.
Do you have groups also?
We do. We have support groups, both for survivors of sexual assault, both for adults and for teens.
Yeah, I would think that would be just to have a sense that there are other people in the same boat, even if nothing happened to the group meeting, it would probably be be helpful.
Yes, you know, I'm glad you bring that up, because individual counseling or therapy furthers healing in a different way than support group does. Mm. Because in support group, you are prepared to not only offer support, but to receive support. And you sit amongst people who have had similar experiences or feelings, and you feel that the isolation is mitigated.
And is there an objective way to measure success? This is not an easy statistic to create. How do you know when you're being successful as an organization?
So the questions that I often ask myself are we serving all pockets in our community in a way that they expect to be served? What are the nuances or unique qualities of various community pockets that we need to step into in order to provide them with adequate services? The other thing that I look at is when we provide services to a community, are they being welcoming to our services? We are a community center, so we are driven by what community wants and what community needs.
And what is the community? What's your service area?
Our service area extends from the Ventura County line down the south up to the Santa Ynez Valley.
Okay, so you don't deal with North County?
We don't. And there's another rape crisis center
And you work together with them?
Or? We do. Oh. We meet about every 6 weeks or so, mm-hmm. not only with them, but also with a rape crisis center in Ventura and San Luis Obispo. And we share information about trends that are happening, how to do things or set up protocols to improve our services. And also, many times we share media, because media extends throughout the region.
You're listening to AHA Presents About Education, and we'll be right back with our final segment.
Here's a question. Do you enjoy experiencing the best of Santa Barbara? Tasty restaurants, scenic hiking, local banking experts. That's right, local banking experts. Montecito Bank and Trust was voted best bank again by the Santa Barbara Independent, Santa Barbara News Press, and Santa Ynez Valley News Readers. Plus, they have over 40 years of experience, 10 branches from Solvang to Westlake, a convenient on-the-go mobile banking app, and a savvy team of local decision makers. Visit Montecito.bank today. Montecito Bank and Trust, member FDIC.
Deckers Brands, the parent company of global lifestyle footwear brands UGG, Teva, Sanuk, Hoka, and Anu, invite you to experience their new brand showcase firsthand in Goleta. Discover new product, try on a range of offerings from your favorite Deckers brand, and get a peek into the company's headquarters. The brand showcase is open for business Monday through Saturday from 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. and from 11 to 5 on Sunday at 250 Coromar Drive in Goleta. See you out there.
Habitat for Humanity of Southern Santa Barbara County is building strength, stability, and self-reliance through shelter. Habitat has completed construction on 19 new homes for affordable homeownership. We'll build 3 new affordable homes this spring and has repaired over 35 homes through the A Brush with Kindness program. To learn more about how you can support Habitat by volunteering, donating, or shopping at the Habitat Restore, visit sbhabitat.org or call 692-2226.
Celebrating 50 years of serving loyal regular guests and first-time visitors, the Pierre Lafon Market and Deli invites you to enjoy their huge selection of fresh-baked sweets, cookies, carrot cake, muffins, and the famous farm cake, granola, Oreo popcorn, wine cake, homemade soups, and the popular fresh juice bar. Or get a coffee drink or fresh-squeezed juice and peruse the famous wall of greeting cards at the Pierre Lafon Market and Deli. Open 6 a.m. to 8 p.m. daily in the Plaza del Sol, Montecito Village.
Welcome back to AHA Presents About Education. AHA helps teens manage their emotions, support their peers, and serve their community. And speaking of serving their community, we have Elsa Granados here, who's Executive Director of Santa Barbara Rape Crisis Center, who has been serving this community for over 20 years. And so tell us a little bit about yourself. Are you a native Californian?
I am a native Californian from the Los Angeles area, the East LA area.
So how does Los Angeles compare to Santa Barbara?
Well, not as congested.
No, I'm kidding. No, I think I know the answer.
Santa Barbara is not as congested as Los Angeles.
Yeah, and you were educated in L.A.?
No, I received my BA from the University of California, Santa Cruz.
Oh, nice.
And in fact, that's where I started my volunteer work in this field. And I started as a volunteer, took the training, felt very enthusiastic about it, and in fact, switched my major. I was a physics major prior to that, and then changed to a psychology major.
Oh, so you have a psychology degree?
Yes, I do.
Yeah.
And also a degree in public administration.
Great. And how do I ask this? Is this a passion that came about simply because it was interesting, because there was a compassion for it? Was there anything personal about it? How did you get interested in a subject that for some people would be really depressing?
You know, people think that it's very depressing, but it's actually not. And I got involved as a volunteer.
I see.
Because of interest. And many people tell me, how can you do this work for so long? It's such a downer. And I say, you know, actually, it's not a downer. It's very uplifting. We have a very uplifting mission because people come to us at a very vulnerable time in their life, and they're seeking help. And when they choose to leave our center, they leave at a different place. We transform lives. We provide that avenue for transformation. And so that is very positive to me.
And do people who have been helped by you come back and either donate or money or time? Do you have a core of people that are so appreciative they actually give back?
Yes. There are some people who give back. There are others who really what happens for them is something terrible has happened in their life, and they want to put it behind them. And although they're very appreciative for what we've done, they don't want to hear about us or talk to us ever again because it brings back memories. And so to the extent that they want to engage in counseling with us, great. And if they want to move on from that and don't want to have further contact, we're okay with that, too.
So you have a board of directors, like all three Cs, and is there a difficulty getting board members? For the same reason I'm questioning whether or not I could ever do your job, which I think the answer is clearly no, but is there sort of a hesitancy among potential board members that this could be too depressing, or are they, you know, and do they need to be convinced, or they naturally think this is something that they can handle?
Well, the way that I see it is that people hold misconceptions about who we are and what we do, which is one of the reasons why we're rebranding. And once they get to know us, once they find out about the work that we do, people are driven by their passion and their empathy and come forward to serve.
So how do we support you? There are donations for specific restricted activities, or is most of your private money just comes in to help in general? In other words, can people go on the web and see certain projects? Are they interested in teens, or they're interested in a particular area?
So people can give their donations in a restricted manner. If you're interested in the education side of our work, absolutely, we will accept those donations. Same goes for the intervention side of our work. Whatever it is, some people want to contribute something concrete, like, I want to buy new computers. Okay, we need new computers, so please send us your money. So people can contribute in many ways. Of course, cash and financial donations are very welcome. The other way that people can contribute is to call us to come and provide education to your group. We want to go out and educate our community. So if you volunteer for a group, come and invite us to be a speaker. Come and provide your goods and services from your business. We welcome those as well.
Elsa Granados, who is a 20-year veteran of the Santa Barbara Rape Crisis Center, thank you so much for, A, being here and for all you do and continue to do. And I hope we can have you back here in 20 years to celebrate your 40th. You're listening to AHA Presents About Education. We'll be back next week.